Amen. Thank you. And I think you're now going to take us in the rest of the service, aren't you? So we'll read together and then Tim will speak to us. Thank you.
So we're going to read from Genesis 18, 1 to 10. That's page 17 on the, I think this is the church Bible, right? Yeah. Okay. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get three seahs of fine flour and knead it and bake some bread." Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. "Where is your wife Sarah?" they asked. "There in the tent," he said. Then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son."
So we are told at the beginning of this chapter that the Lord appeared to Abraham. And if you've read the letter, letter to the Hebrews, you'll know also that in chapter 13, verse 2, says some have entertained angels without being aware. And that is a reference to this chapter. But Abraham, he didn't know any of that. All he saw were three strange men. Three men who were on a journey, three men who were foreigners, who he didn't know. And if you turn back a couple of pages in your Bible, you'll see at the beginning of chapter 14 that not long since, Abraham had been at war with some of the nations around him, with the kings of Shinar, Elasar, Elam, and Goyim. And so, probably, Abraham at least had it at the back of his mind that these men may not have been friendly. These men from foreign nations, possibly the nations he'd just been to war with, may have been enemies. Now, they didn't come with an army, so they probably weren't going to attack him at that very moment, but they could easily have been spies, people who were there to scope out the land, ready to take revenge on Abraham for his recent actions. Now, maybe that sounds fanciful to you, maybe that sounds bizarre, but for the Ngokdinka and others who have experience of having been under attack from their neighbours, that doesn't sound strange. And even some people in this country would see foreigners as perhaps a threat to their security or way of life. Especially, even more so for Abraham, whose context was that of warring tribes, and who had recently been to war. And yet, what does Abraham do? Well, he rushes out of his tent. He hurries, some versions say he runs from the entrance of his tent to meet them. Abraham, they don't go to him, they don't ask for support, for hospitality. They don't poke their heads around the entrance to the tent and say, oh, if you don't mind, we're a bit hungry, we've been on a long journey, could you help us? Now, they were nearby, but the very fact that he had to rush or run to get to them suggests that they weren't right outside his tent. They could easily have passed by. And yet Abraham is not willing to take the risk that they will pass by his tent without him blessing them, without him showing them hospitality. They don't ask for help, but he is determined that he is going to bless them. His hospitality is proactive. And it's not only proactive, it is also extravagant. He runs out of his tent. He then runs over to Sarah and to his servant. And he gives them the absolute best of what he has. Not whatever is left over, the best. We've recently had a heat wave in the UK. Temperatures going up to around 37 degrees. Not so bad for us. We're used to it with temperatures of up to 40 in Custodia and sometimes even more in Abyei. But I imagine it wasn't so easy for all of you. Maybe it was a struggle some of these days. On the day when it got up to around 36, 37, I don't know if you remember what you had for lunch. Maybe you had a sandwich, maybe a slice of cold quiche with some salad. Now, we're told at the beginning of this chapter that all this happened in the heat of the day and it was hot where Abraham lived. I don't know what the temperature was, but perhaps it was around 37, 38, 39, 40. And yet, what does he do? He runs in the heat of the day. And then he asks Sarah bless her to bake bread in the hot part of the day, in that hot climate. And then he goes to his servant and he doesn't ask him to get a cold slice of quiche from the fridge. He asks him to make him a roast dinner, to take a calf and to roast it, to give the absolute best. And he puts it together with the curds and the milk, the best that he has. And he offers this to these men, not just what he had lying around, but the very best at sacrifice to himself and his family and his workers, and you know, totally inconvenient for him, but he gives them the absolute best of what he has. And remember as well that these men are on a journey, they're passing by, he may never see them again. So this extravagance is not with the hope that they're going to invite him for roast dinner the next Sunday. It is expecting that he will never get anything back from them. Is blessing them extravagantly without the hope of getting anything back in return. And that reminds me of Jesus' teaching when in Luke, before the parable of the great banquet, he said in Luke 14, verses 12 to 14, when you give a luncheon or dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers or relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. And so Abraham's hospitality to those who may well be his enemies is proactive, it is extravagant, and is given without the expectation of getting anything back in return. So why? Why does he do this? Now, you could say to me, well, Tim, it's a cultural value to give hospitality. And I've no doubt that that is true. I've no doubt that Abraham should, according to the cultural values of the society he lived in, which is still strong in many places in the world, including in Abyei, he should bless them. Hospitality is an important cultural value. But he goes far beyond just what could be expected here. If he was just doing what he ought to have done by the standards of his society, by the standards of his day, he didn't have to go as far as he did. It didn't have to be as extravagant as it was. I think there must be some other reason as well. Now, if you go back to Genesis 12, to the call of Abraham, you'll see that God, when he called Abraham, when he promised he was going to make a great nation of him, when he promised a land to Abraham's descendants, he also said that that wasn't just so that Abraham could be blessed, but so that all the nations might be blessed through Abraham. And it might be that Abraham had that in mind, that he thought, well, this is a chance for me to live out my calling. He'd already done that a bit when he rescued not just his own nephew Lot, but people from some of the other tribes around in chapter 14. But maybe that was on his mind. He thought, these people are from other nations. I've got this call to be a blessing to the nations. This is a chance for me to start to live that out. That could be. But I think that Abraham, who was not daft, is also thinking, well, these people could be my enemies. And he's also conscious that hospitality creates a space in which our enemies can be transformed from enemies to friends and even brothers. That there is no guarantee of that happening, but it creates a space in which there is the opportunity for that to happen. And so he is deliberately, intentionally exercising hospitality, hoping that these people who could be enemies will be transformed into friends. But whatever the reason, he can't expect what happens. Whatever his intentions, he's not done it with any expectation of getting anything in return, and yet he receives incredible blessings because that he receives unexpected blessings, blessings that he can't anticipate when he opens himself up in this way by showing hospitality. And we see at the end, the verses after, the very end of this text, that although Abraham has already been promised a son, and it's been clarified that that will be through Sarah, it now gets real. By next year, the visitors say, by next year, Sarah is going to give birth to a son. And all God's promises are going to be realized through that son. And not only that, but God also reveals his plans to Abraham. God also reveals his plans to Abraham. And he tells Abraham what he's going to do, that he's planning to judge Sodom and Gomorrah. And he gives Abraham this chance to advocate for the righteous, not that there are many of them, but for the righteous few in those places. And he gives this chance for Abraham to actually argue with him. And as a result, for his nephew Lot and some of his family to be saved. And so these unexpected blessings, they come out of this opportunity that Abraham creates by showing hospitality. And when the men go to Sodom, what happens? Well, Lot invites them in, but others don't. In fact, rather than show them hospitality, they threaten them with unspeakable acts of violence. They seem to be trying to deter other foreigners from coming, other potential enemies from coming. They have the opposite approach to Abraham. Abraham tries to make his enemy into a friend by showing hospitality. The men in Sodom and Gomorrah threaten to do terrible things to the men to deter others and from coming. And when Lot tries to defend them, what is their response? They say, well, you're a foreigner too. And what happens as a result? Well, while hospitality leads to unexpected blessings in the case of Abraham, the opposite, these threats of violence to deter people from coming, they lead to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And Sodom and Gomorrah become bywords for not receiving foreigners well. And so when Jesus sends out the disciples and he says, well, if people don't receive you well, it will be worse for them than it will be even for Sodom and Gomorrah, those cities famous for not receiving strangers well. Now, I've preached on this text in both Abyei and in Brazil. And in Abyei, I preached on this a couple of years ago at a time when the civil war in Sudan, to the north of Abyei, was leading many people to flee Sudan, both people who were Sudanese, but also people who were South Sudanese, who were returning to their ancestral homelands, perhaps people who'd been living many years, even born in Sudan, but who are ethnically South Sudanese, who thought this civil war isn't showing any signs of getting any better. We're going to come back to our ancestral homeland and come through the land of Abyei, which is on the border. And these included people from the very communities that had been attacking Abyei in the previous years. So the people who had been attacking Abyei were coming looking for safe passage or even to stay in Abyei. Now they themselves were fleeing conflict. And what did the Ngok Dinka do? How did they respond to this? Well, they received people, they welcomed people, they did it proactively, inviting them to come and stay in their villages, even though they were cousins, extended family of those who had been attacking them even a year before that. Some of the villages, they doubled in size. So you had villages where half the village was now Ngok Dinka and half was made up from people from tribes that had been attacking them a year ago. People who they'd invited to come and live alongside them, build shelters together with them, and they extravagantly shared what they had with them. They shared the clean water, which already wasn't enough for their community. They shared the fish from the river, which already wasn't enough for their community. They shared the limited food assistance that they had, which wasn't enough for their community. They did it at great risk to themselves because they were now living alongside at night. How are these people from tribes who had attacked them a year ago going to treat them while they slept at night? And so, you know, there are people who are worried about tens of thousands of people coming from as refugees to this country. But imagine the equivalent of the whole population of this country coming, 70 million people coming. And imagine if they were coming from countries, you know, imagine if it had happened at the end of the Second World War and you'd got the whole population of UK coming from Germany. That would be like what was happening in Abyei at that time. And yet they received them with hospitality, risky hospitality, sharing the limited things that they had, which were not enough for them, with those who were coming to live alongside them. Yeah, and I said to them, my message to them was simply, well done, good and faithful servants. God is pleased with you because you are living out not only the example of Abraham, but also the gospel that we have. Because God also invited us in when we were his enemies. Paul says in the letter of Romans chapter 5 that while we were still his enemies, God reconciled him us to himself. John puts it another way and says that God loved us first before we were able to love him. We could never have made ourselves God's friends. We could never have dealt with our own sin. Only God was able to deal with our sin on the cross and open a way for us to be his friends when we were his enemies. And he did that knowing that it was not only at huge cost to himself, but also that not everyone would accept that offer. That was a risky offer of hospitality because not everyone would respond to that invite to his great feast, his great banquet, to be invited in, but many would continue to reject him. Many would continue to persecute him and his followers. And yet he offered that invite of hospitality to us all. And so my message was that as you preach that gospel, you are also living out that gospel. You are authenticating that message of hospitality. You are evidencing that that is what God does and that is what God's followers do. And that when you do that, not only is that the right thing to do, but there is the possibility that some of your enemies will become your friends and even your brothers. And that you will receive unexpected blessings. Not the same blessings in kind, but you will receive unexpected blessings from God. And you know, that is what has happened in Abyei, because not everyone, but many of the people from the community to the south of them, the Twitch Dinka and many of the Miseria, have started to think, why are we attacking these people? Why are we attacking these people who in our hour of need have not sought revenge, but have sought to bless us, even at great cost to themselves? And the situation is not completely resolved, but it is now much better between the Twitch and the Ngok than it was before they showed this risky and extravagant sacrificial hospitality, following the example of Abraham and of Jesus Christ. Now, in Brazil, the situation is different, but the gospel of God's hospitality is also relevant there. And we have sought to make this new building a place where hospitality is extended to the community of Serra da Torre, but also beyond. We want to make room so that we and others can be transformed together in that space. And we have built a building which is 6 times the size it needs to be. For the few believers in that community, we do not need a space just to hold services that is as big as it is. And on an average week, when we don't have a special event, we will often have 10 or 20 people there. But then it is also the only, in a space where there, a community where there is no community center, it is also a space where we can hold vaccination drives, benefit sign-up drives, where we've had opticians and other health professionals come to offer services, and which can be filled with 150 people on some of those occasions. It's a space which has a wonderful kitchen and where people drop in and have informal Bible studies with us who don't feel comfortable coming to regular services. It is a space where Hannah has said where we've got 4 lovely bedrooms and space for also for youth camps, but also for already where people, pastors who are burnt out, are coming and just enjoying time with God, being fed by God and with beautiful nature around them to receive and to be restored, and where we want to do more formal guided retreats for people there as well. It is a space where we want people from the community to be able to receive hospitality, but also be able to offer hospitality to others from outside the community. It is a space where we preach the message that God has taken the initiative, that God has shown hospitality by inviting us in, by making a way on the cross to transform us from his enemies into his friends, but where we also authenticate and evidence that message by showing that hospitality in action as well. It is a space where we have a huge roof where we generate enough solar power to help not only some of the houses nearby us, as well as the church itself, but also some of that energy goes into the grid and pays down the bill of a children's project in the city centre. And so that community, that poor community, is actually blessing its neighbours in the richer city centre of Custodia. And where water runs off the roof and fills 2 enormous cisterns, which provide tens of thousands of litres of water for homes that don't have their own water nearby as well. And so in all these ways, we are trying to show that we follow a God of hospitality and evidence that as we love those around us. But my question for you today is, who is God calling you to show hospitality to? Who might you see as a threat, a possible enemy, but God actually wants you to risk the inconvenience of showing his extravagant hospitality to them? What does it mean for you to be proactive about that hospitality, not waiting until someone comes to you and asks you for help, but actually running to them, not risking, like Abraham, not risking that they might go past without receiving your welcome, your hospitality? And what does it mean for that hospitality not just to be the minimum that they need, but to be extravagant, to be the best of what you can offer, just as God gave the best that he could possibly give to us, even his own son on the cross? So who, even who might be a threat or an enemy, is God calling you to show hospitality to? How can you be proactive seeking them out without waiting for them to come to you? And how can you offer them the best of what you have, not just whatever you have lying around? And as you do so, I believe that God will not only transform you and that person together, making you potentially into friends or even brothers and sisters, but he will also give you unexpected blessings, which may be totally different from the things you offer, but things that you could not possibly have imagined. God bless you as you offer his blessings to others.